November 18th, 2025, meeting of the Montville Planning and Zoning Commission to order. And the first order of our business tonight is the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Roll call, Mr. Secretary.
Commissioner Longton?
Here.
Commissioner Terry?
Here.
Commissioner Gillette? Commissioner Pike? Not here. Commissioner Gennard, I am here. Commissioner Lundy, she's not here. Commissioner Kovlik?
Here.
Commissioner Summers?
Here.
And Chairman Pinias?
Here.
We have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Move on. There are no additions or changes to the agenda. I'll entertain a motion to approve the minutes of the October 28th, 2025 regular meeting and the November 13th, 2025 special meeting minutes.
So moved.
Second.
Motion and a second. Any discussion on that? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Anyone oppose? Anyone abstain? Minutes are accepted. Number six on our agenda, remarks from the public not relating to items on the agenda. Do we have any remarks from the public this evening on any items not related to items on the agenda? Okay. We'll move on. We're going to go to our public hearing. Agenda item 7, and the first item is 7A, 25 sub 7, 47 Sharp Hill Road, 023-063-000, 23 lot re-subdivision. The owner, R&N Holding Company, LLC. The applicant is Mount Kineo Builders, LLC. This was submitted 9/5/25. And the public hearing was opened on 10/28/25. We're actually going to open two public hearings on this evening. So I'm going to also read into the record item 7C, which is the special permit for 47 Sharp Hill Road. 023-063-000, 23 lot cluster re-subdivision. Same owner, R&N Holding Company, LLC, and the applicant, Mount Kineo Builders. The public hearing is now open. Okay, we'll go to Meredith.
Meredith Badaluca for the record. The proposal is for a 23-lot residential cluster re-subdivision. It will be on a new cul-de-sac with open space and stormwater management areas. The background of the property is in 2012, the PZC approved a two-lot subdivision which created 40 Carroll Drive. In 2016, the PZC approved a seven-lot subdivision. These lots are now known as 45, 48, 49, 52, 53, 56, and 57 Carroll Drive. In 2024, a boundary line adjustment was done between 45 Sharp Hill Road and 47 Sharp Hill Road, and those were filed on the land records. Again, the property is located in the R20 zoning district. The applicant is proposing a cluster development, which is zoning regulation section 16.10, which requires a special permit. All proposed lots meet the minimum lot size, minimum frontage, and setback requirements of zoning regulation 16.10.6, as shown on the zoning compliance table of the plans entitled Resubdivision Plans Evergreen Hills, 23 lot residential resubdivision, 47 Sharp Hill Road, Montville, Connecticut, 06382. The cluster development bulk requirements frontage side yards, front yards, and rear yards may be reduced by 25%. However, no side yard shall be less than 10 feet. This parcel does contain wetlands, therefore the applicant did submit an application to the Inland Wetlands Commission per subdivision regulation section 3.4.2. The Wetlands Commission approved with conditions at their August 21st, 2025 meeting. Per subdivision regulation section 4.3.5, the assessor's office has provided lot numbers and street numbers for the proposed lots. Per subdivision regulation section 4.3.9, the proposed name of the street, Jonathan Way, is different so that not to be confused in sound or spelling with present names in the town. A written statement was provided for a will serve by the WPCA via email dated October 1st, 2024, per subdivision regulation 4.7.2. Per zoning regulation 4.10.2, minimum lot frontage requirements may be reduced to no less than 50 feet for lots facing a circular turnaround at the end of a dead-end street, provided that the frontage requirement is maintained at the building line. Proposed lots 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, and 17 all meet this requirement. Per zoning regulation 16.10.6, the frontage may be reduced 25%. The required frontage in the R20 zone is 80 feet, therefore reducing it by 25% is 60 feet. Three of the proposed lots are interior lots, which require a lot area and a front yard setback equal to at least 1.5 times the minimum for the zoning district. Therefore, the front yard setback for these interior lots shall be 45 feet. Interior lots shall also have a 25-foot wide access strip and be accessed via a shared driveway, and all three of these lots do. There were some staff review comments that needed to be addressed. These can all be a condition of approval. They just need a revision of the site plan and have been included in any conditions of approval should the commission decide to approve this. And all legal documents need to be reviewed and approved by the town attorney. And the applicant is here. Bill Sweeney for the applicant.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Good evening. For the record tonight, my name is Bill Sweeney. I'm a land use attorney and a partner at the law firm of Tobin Carberry down in New London. And it's a pleasure to be here tonight. Thank you for having me, and thank you for the introduction to the project, Merida. I appear before you on behalf of my client, Mount Kineo Builders, LLC, which has applied for both a re-subdivision and a special permit, the reason why we have two public hearings open at, simultaneously. For a 23-lot cluster development at 47 Sharp Hill Road here in Montville. Joining me tonight, I have John Felice. John is the project's land surveyor. I also have Seamus Moran, who's the project civil engineer. You're gonna hear from both of them tonight in the presentation of the project. Tonight, you sit in your administrative capacity as both a planning commission, reviewing the re-subdivision application before you, and a zoning commission reviewing the special permit that's also required for the project. As you know, the division of land for building lots requires subdivision review, but the use of the cluster development regulations to gain flexibility in lot layout and design requires a special permit under section 9.3.2 of the regulations. Mr. Felice is going to walk you through the detailed layout of the cluster subdivision, re-subdivision in a few minutes, but I just wanted to touch on a few key considerations as you review our applications tonight. The re-subdivision of a property tonight involves a 19.47-acre parcel, and as your planner has indicated, this is in the R20 zoning district. This parcel was left over from a previous subdivision approved back in 2016, and as I understand it, this land was formerly a tree farm, but now it's basically overgrown and taken back over by forest. The property does have a very, very small area of wetlands. I'll make sure John points that out to you, but as your planner indicated, we did obtain approval from your Inland Wetland Commission in August for the subdivision of the land. As you're likely aware, cluster developments have their own section in your zoning regulations. They're regulated under section 16.10. And again, there requires a special permit in the R20 zone. The explicit purpose of the cluster development regulations is to provide developers and property owners an alternative to the traditional subdivision of tract development. And that's really to try to combat problems with urban sprawl. The idea is to try to harken back to early New England development patterns that set aside the idea of the cluster subdivision is really to sort of harken back to early New England development patterns and actually preserve open space, what we consider part of the character of southeastern New England, as part of residential development. To encourage this approach, your regulations allow flexibility in the traditional lot bulk and dimensional characteristics, really with the effort to try to allow us to concentrate development into a smaller footprint. That reduces infrastructure costs and then thus transitively also housing costs, and it also preserves open space and natural resources. It's a win-win proposition. And these type of alternative subdivisions have been widely used throughout Connecticut, widely used throughout the region, and I think the demand for new housing, particularly over the last couple of years, has really made these types of developments viable again from an economic standpoint, and also something that communities want to have when people are subdividing lots for single-family development. The re-subdivision that you're going to be presented with tonight is served by municipal sewer and private wells, and it far exceeds, at 19.47 acres, it exceeds the 10-acre minimum requirement to be eligible for cluster development under your regulations. The minimum lot size in a cluster subdivision within the R20 district is 10,000 square feet. You'll see that as we go through the plans tonight. And the 23 proposed building lots do not exceed the permissible density for a conventional subdivision of this same piece of land. Again, meeting one of the other requirements to use the cluster regulations. Mr. Felice is going to illustrate this in his presentation, but we are going to, and your planner also talked about it, we're going to be taking advantage of the ability under the cluster development regulations to reduce some of the bulk and dimensional characteristics of these lots, such as lot frontage, for example, up to 25%. And we're going to be, as part of this project, also deeding the new cul-de-sac, Jonathan Way, over to the town. And we also are proposing to deed 8.63 acres of land into permanent preserved open space to the town of Montville, which is located at the end of the subdivision, at the end of the cul-de-sac. And that's far in excess of the 15% requirement under your cluster development regulations. The new road that serves the 23 lots will meet town road standards. It's going to be deeded over to the town, along with a non-building lot where we're going to have the stormwater features from which that road drains. And Mr. Moran will talk a little bit about that as well. This resubdivision plan, as you see through your report, has gone through an extensive review process with your town engineers, other agencies and departments. We believe it's fully compliant with both your subdivision regulations and your zoning regulations, but there are certain conditions or modifications of approval that your planner has suggested tonight if you choose to approve it. We certainly have reviewed those conditions and or modifications of approval. We think they're reasonable and, quite frankly, appropriate under the circumstances. Finally, in terms of the special permit for the cluster development itself, we believe we also meet your special permit criteria. We've demonstrated compliance with your regulations. We've fully addressed various health and safety issues regarding traffic design, safe sight lines, the utility capacity for the project, and the resource protection of key critical areas on the property, all of which were carefully vetted during this extensive review process. Moreover, I think it's really important. We believe that the use of the cluster development approach for this subdivision allows for a much more attractive overall residential development, one that protects significant open space first and foremost, but it also allows us to concentrate the development toward the front of the parcel, toward Sharp Hill Road, And that's going to reduce our overall infrastructure needs to facilitate the project, and that's going to affect housing costs in a positive way, which I think is so important in this economy. And I think we know collectively the issues with housing and the lack of reasonably, attainably priced housing in this community. So at this point, I'm going to turn the presentation over to Mr. Felice. He's going to walk you through in detail over the plan, and then Mr. Moran's going to come up, just highlight the key aspects of our engineering design. But thank you for your time.
Good evening. For the record, John Felice from Boundaries LLC. Attorney Sweeney didn't leave me much, but we'll take it. Flip to sheet two in the plan set, which is actually the third sheet. The cover sheet is not numbered. However, this would be the third sheet in the plans that you have in front of you. And I'm going to apologize for being repetitive with some of this information, and I will try to go through that portions of it quickly. As you've already heard, the plans have been prepared jointly by Boundaries and H&H Engineering, and Seamus is here and will provide you some additional information. As Attorney Sweeney said, the property consists of 19.47 acres located in the R20 zone. The parcel is located north of Sharp Hill Road and east of Carroll Drive. Topography is sloping to the east, and the wetlands located on the property are two small pockets, one located in the northeasterly portion of the property to the rear of 45 Sharp Hill Road, and one located all the way at the back of the property adjacent to the westerly property line, being a small strip that would be shown on the next. We've proposed 23 lots in the cluster development in accordance with section 16.10, and the lots range in size from 10,721 square feet to 22,971 square feet, reminding that the 10,000 square foot threshold is the minimum lot size for this. Many of these lots are 12 to 15,000 square feet, but those are the outermost extremes of each. The lots will be served by on-site wells and public sewers, as been mentioned, and we did provide a will-serve letter with the application. You also have comment from the Uncas Health District regarding the availability of on-site wells. The access to the property will be provided over the Newtown Road that was described, Jonathan Way, extending approximately 1,000 feet westerly from Sharp Hill Road to the rear of the property in the vicinity of lots 14 and 15, where a cul-de-sac has been proposed. To the rear of that cul-de-sac, we have proposed an easement to access the open space that was mentioned earlier. The open space itself consists of 8.63 acres, which is approximately 44% of the subject property, nearly three times the requirement for the zone that we're in as it applies to the cluster development. The open space was configured in such a way that it joins this cul-de-sac that we're proposing to the cul-de-sac on Carroll Drive, which will provide connectivity between those two neighborhoods in the form of open space that is proposed to be dedicated to the town. The town currently has, and it's depicted on the next plan set, Carroll Drive, the town currently holds an easement for stormwater discharge onto that portion of the property as it is, and that will obviously remain, but it will now be part of town property in fee, and the drainage easement from Carroll Drive will remain in place. One of the things I'd like to point out as we look at this, cluster developments from a construction standpoint, typically because of the nature of the project themselves, it's better to have them constructed by a single developer. Mount Kineo Builders is actually committed to building not only road and infrastructure, but all of these lots. None of these lots are anticipated for individual sale. They will all be developed by the developer. We have received two mounds of comments from the town engineer and staff. Those comments have been reviewed and addressed in part. There are a couple of outstanding housekeeping items that Attorney Sweeney mentioned as well that will be resolved on final plans before their submission. The sight lines that have been discussed on Sharp Hill Road are depicted on sheet 12 of the plan set that you have in front of you. The staff report included reference to a lot line modification that was done in 2024. We were a party to that, and that lot line modification was done with 45 Sharp Hill Road, at which time we had enough foresight to reserve sight line easements so that sight lines from this proposed road are protected via an easement over the frontage of 45 Sharp Hill Road, so that that sight line will be maintained. The roadway, stormwater management system, ENS controls, and utility infrastructure has been designed by Seamus, who will get up and give you a presentation on the management of stormwater and how we deal with the drainage facilities on site. If you have any questions about the lot configuration of the open space, I'd be happy to answer them. If you want to save them for later, that's fine.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Felice?
Not yet.
Okay.
Not at this time.
Good evening, Commission. My name is Seamus Moran, PE in Connecticut, and I am the civil engineer in the project. Thank you for having us tonight. I'm just going to go over the drainage, soil erosion, sediment control, and briefly touch on the utilities, and then I'll pass it back to Bill for any final remarks. So if you're familiar with the site, it's, as John pointed out, it slopes, high point along the western edge, along the western edge of the property. It slopes from the west. So this is the grading and stormwater management sheet. So as I mentioned, it's high point over here, low point over here, but it's also high point near the top of our cul-de-sac and low point of our street. So about 3/4 of the roadway is draining back down to the east, or south, yeah, to the south. So from about this point down is all being managed cascading stormwater management basin system. And because of the topography, we can't just put a bigger, longer basin. We have to do a kind of a tiered system. So the first basin is about a 2-foot cut, 2-foot fill across the basin. And then it goes down to the second basin, again, 2-foot cut, 2-foot fill, to the third basin. So as the stormwater reaches the basin, it goes into the first basin. As it fills up in that basin, there's an outlet control structure that allows the water to get to the second basin. In that basin, it again fills up and it discharges to the third basin. When it finally fills up in the third basin, it'll discharge to the well. And that, each of these basins provides water quality treatment, also quantity treatment, so we're able to detain enough water so that way we're not introducing more water on the neighboring property than currently existing. And we have demonstrated that in our HydroCAD modeling and calculations, showing that we are reducing peak rates and also the volumes of runoff getting to this wetland. And if you saw one of the comments from the town engineer, there was an existing problem on 19 Sharp Hill Road where there's some water issues. So he wanted us to address that and specifically how much water we're contributing to that point, which eventually gets to that property. So we are demonstrating that we're actually reducing the volume of water and the peak rates to that neighbor. So based on our calculations, we're actually gonna be improving that situation with this development. The top portion of the roadway, where it flattened out, this goes to another basin, a smaller basin, for a smaller contributing area. This basin, again, is sized very similar to the other basins where it's designed to manage both for quality and for quantity. So it's designed to fill up to the water quality event and then start spilling over. And it just operates in the same way. So we're demonstrating both in two different analysis points to this property line here that we're not increasing the peak rates, and to the property line in the southeast corner that we're not increasing the peak rates or volumes. Utilities. John pointed out we don't have public water, so there are private wells proposed on each of the lots, but there is public sewer. So we're showing a new sewer main coming up the drive. sewer main that comes all the way up into the middle of the cul-de-sac. Each of these homes will connect into the sewer main by gravity. This is the gravity main, gravity laterals as well. And then electric telephone cable is proposed along the outside edge of the roadway.
I think last but not least is the soil erosion and sediment control plan. So as they're building this development, what you see here, obviously, it does not include any of the homes at this point. What we're proposing first is the construction of the roadway. So he has to, the developer has to get in there and construct the roadway so that way he can go and then construct the individual lots after that. So what you see here is the roadway construction and the improvements that are necessary for the first phase. So what we have shown is the construction entrance at the main entrance. Silt sacks and all of the catch basins that are proposed, temporary sediment trap to capture any of that runoff from the top of the hill prior to the basin, and soil erosion and sediment, erosion control matting at steep slopes that are 3-1 or under. And of course, silt fence along the down gradient limits of disturbance. And in certain areas where it's channelized, where we see a lot of the water, the majority of the water, we have hay bales backing that silt fence as well. So I think we've taken all the measures and for soil erosion and sediment control. With that, unless Bill has anything else for me, I think I'll pass it back to Bill. Unless anybody has questions on stormwater, soil erosion and sediment control.
Any questions for Mr. Moran? Thank you very much.
Sure, you're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you, Seamus. I know you have a busy agenda tonight. We've gone through a very exhaustive review process with your staff. We've made a basic presentation sort of at 10,000 feet. We're happy to drill into any particular element of the project plans. Mr. Felice, Mr. Moran, and myself are all available. But we would hope that you would agree with your staff that we meet the basic regulations and that, you know, obviously the use of a cluster subdivision tool here is a great way of preserving some open space as well as creating some new home lots here in Montville. I know my client is very eager to get this approval in place so that they can move forward with the property and move forward with this development. So with that, that'll conclude my remarks. I know this is a public hearing. I would just reserve the right to rebuttal if necessary.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Absolutely. Thank you. Dennis?
Dennis Lear, Director of Planning. The erosion control plan is in the middle of lots, especially on the bottom of the sheet, are cut. Can you explain a little bit how that construction of the lots and then the erosion control on each individual lot will occur? On the bottom of the page. So there's probably about 10 feet of cut in order to get to the lots.
It varies. It varies. It's not all 10 feet. But what we are proposing that I should have mentioned, one of the two comments addressed or asked about that. And essentially, if there could potentially be a breakout of groundwater from the cutting. So what we did is to satisfy that comment. Going to happen during initial construction phase, and eventually that groundwater won't be there in the future as it drains the groundwater
In which direction does that groundwater drain?
So the top of the hill is on the bottom of the page. The bottom of the hill is on the top of the page. So it all drains from the bottom of the page to the top of the page. And also, I'm sure there's some sort of gradient from the cul-de-sac to the road.
So that 6-inch pipe goes from there to there?
He just wanted to use it.
Show off.
On the earthwork side, is this a balanced site? Do you have an end for it?
We did our dividing to the top hill. Well, what we did was the best we could in order to run the road down the center of the strip.
Thank you. Any other questions for Mr. Moran? Go ahead.
Well, not for Mr. Moran, whether it's for staff or Attorney Sweeney. I noticed there is no comments from the fire marshal. Has fire apparatus maneuvering been looked at?
We did refer it out twice to the fire marshal. He did not provide any comments, but the road was looked at by the town engineer and by Public Works, and it does meet our town road standards, which would take that into consideration.
Looks like you may have.
Even for the interior lots?
I was just going to comment, I think Meredith already said it, is I know it did get referred out to the fire marshal. Mm-hmm. The road does meet your town design standard for cul-de-sac design for turning radius and size of the cul-de-sac, so we do know that we met that requirement. I don't know if the fire marshal has had any additional comments at this time.
Okay. Thank you.
I'm sorry. I didn't hear your question.
Also, for emergency vehicles, like fire, like somebody had, like one of the material lots, the house kitchen is on fire. Will they able a fire truck get there, or are they going to have to go through a whole act of Congress to get back there, and by the time they get there, the house burnt down?
The interior lot driveways meet
the minimal accept the standards? Okay.
Yeah, exactly. We meet the standards for interior lot design.
Okay.
And again, I think if the fire marshal, I think it was referred at least twice, because it was also referred during the wetland process as well. So if there was an issue, it probably would have come up by now.
Okay. Thank you. Commission members, any other questions? So at this time, I would like to go to the public. Anyone on both of these items, agenda item 7A, the subdivision, and 7C, the special permit, would anyone like to speak in favor of these applications? Would anyone like to speak in opposition to the applications? Would anyone like to speak in favor of the applications? Would anyone like to speak in opposition to both applications? Last call. Anyone like to speak in favor? Anyone like to speak in opposition? Commission members, any other questions for staff? Attorney Sweeney?
I just wanted to thank the commission for its time tonight. I would ask for action on this application if you deem it ready to be approved tonight. And I just want to thank you, your staff, particularly Meredith, for her help in coordinating this. She did a great job in review, and she's just a pleasure to work with, as always. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Nice to hear. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. Hearing none, I'll entertain a motion to close both public hearings.
Mm-hmm. Second.
A motion and a second. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone oppose? Anyone abstain? Both public hearings are closed. We're going to take action on these one at a time, okay? So 7B is discussion decision on 47 Sharp Hill Road, map 23, lot 63, 23 lot re-subdivision. The owner is R&N Holding Company, LLC. The applicant, Mount Kineo Builders, LLC. Okay. In your staff report, you have...
Chairman, can we ask?
Yes.
We can do them together because I wrote the staff report and the motion to do them together.
Oh, okay. So let me continue to add to your 7D, the discussion and decision on 47 Sharp Hill Road, map 23, lot 63, the 23 lot cluster re-subdivision. So we'll take action on both of those together. I'll entertain a motion.
So moved.
You have to read the whole thing.
We're going to have to read the motion. Miss Terry, would you like to read it? Or?
Sure.
Yeah, good training.
I make a motion to approve with conditions numbers 1-29 as indicated in the staff report dated November 18th, 2025. Application 25 sub 7 and 25 SP1 for a 23 lot cluster re-subdivision, 47 Sharp Hill Road, parcel ID 023-063-000. In that the application, supporting documents, and a plan set entitled Resubdivision Plans Evergreen Hills, 23-lot residential resubdivision, 47 Sharp Hill Road, Montville, Connecticut, 06382. Prepared for MK Kineo Builders, LLC, dated July 10th, 2025. Revised November 12th, 2025. Comply with all applicable sections of the Montville Zoning Regulations and Subdivision Regulations. Conditions. Conditions prior to endorsement of final plans. One. Plans shall be revised to address assistant planner technical review comments listed in staff report dated November 18, 2025. Two, plans shall be revised to address CLA's review comments dated November 17, 2025. CLA shall review and approve revisions. Three, provide offers of deed per SR 4.7.4 for review and approval by the town attorney. Four, right of access and maintenance easement, drainage easement, walking trail easement, and sightline easement shall be reviewed and approved by the town attorney. Any required changes to the plans may require a plan modification from the Planning and Zoning Commission. Five, certificate of title shall be reviewed and approved by the town attorney. Six, shared driveway agreement shall be reviewed and approved by the town attorney. Any required changes to the plans may require a plan modification from the Planning and Zoning Commission. Seven, warranty deeds and easements granted to the town of Montville shall be accepted by the town council. Eight, performance bond in the amount of $1,130,000 shall be posted. Nine, per SR section 3.9 GIS and ZR section 17.3 digital data shall be provided to the Land Use Department prior to endorsement of the final subdivision plan. Three sets of paper plans along with Mylars that include any required revisions incorporated shall be submitted to the Land Use Department for signature of the Commission. 11, all plans submitted for signature shall bear the seal and live signature of the appropriate professionals responsible for the preparation of the plan. 12, a list outlining how the conditions of approval have been met shall be submitted along with the final plan submitted for signature. 13, a list outlining any changes to the plan shall be submitted along with final plans submitted for signature. The list should cite the sheet number where each change has been made. 14, all town engineer referral invoices shall be paid pursuant to the Town of Montville Ordinance Number 2007-002. General conditions. 15, special permit shall be recorded in accordance with Zoning Regs Section 4.4. 16, special permit endorsement and filing shall meet the requirements of Zoning Regs Section 16.4C.C.6. 17, approve warranty deeds, easements, easement documents, shared driveway agreements, and conditions of approval shall be filed on the land records with the final endorsed Mylars. 18, the sightline easement over number 45 Sharp Hill Road shall be conveyed to the town of Monville with or prior to acceptance of the road. 19, no work shall commence until Mylar signed by the Planning and Zoning Commission have been filed on the town of Monville land records. 20, the Monville Department of Public Works shall be notified prior to any work within the town right away. 21, construction inspections for public improvements will be required in accordance with the Town Road Standards, Section 50. 22, copies of the registration and inspection reports for the Connecticut Deep general permit for the discharge of stormwater and dewatering wastewaters from construction activities shall be provided to the town throughout construction. 23, licensed land surveyors shall certify proposed iron pins and monuments as set prior to road acceptance. 24, road monumentation shall be installed and reflected on the record plan prior to acceptance. 25, the Monville Department of Public Works shall be contacted prior to the drainage construction to verify the layout and inspect the work. 26, any required certificates and or approvals from state or federal agencies, i.e. Connecticut DOT, DEEP, Army Corps of Engineers, shall be obtained by the applicant and submitted to the Land Use and Development Office. Any changes to the plans required by such entities may require a plan modification from Planning and Zoning Commission. Conditions prior to conveyance of any lot and issuance of zoning permit for individual lot development. 27. All public improvements shall be completed. Public Works and the town engineer shall inspect and accept said work prior to the completion of an as-built plan. 28. An as-built plan certified to Class A2 accuracy shall be submitted. The as-built plan shall also contain a certification by a professional engineer that they have inspected the site improvements and that they have been installed in accordance with the approved plan. Any deviation or omissions must be noted. 29, wetland placards shall be placed by LS at 50 foot URA on lot 1 and lot 4.
Thank you, Commissioner Terry.
I'll second that motion.
So we have a motion and a second. Before we vote, for the record, I'm just going to state that I am a butter of property. I have no conflict of interest in this application. I have no financial interest in this application. So I will stay on and I will be voting. I can take a neutral position on it. So just that stated for the record. Roll call vote, Mr. Secretary.
Commissioner Longton.
Favor.
Yes.
Commissioner Terry.
Favor.
Commissioner Gillette's not here. Commissioner Pike's not here. Commissioner Gerard, I say yes. Commissioner Lundy's not here. Commissioner Kovalik?
In favor.
Commissioner Summers?
In favor.
And Chairman Piniac?
In favor.
So, all in favor.
You're approved.
Thank you so much.
Congrats.
You're welcome.
Take care of that mess.
All righty, we're going to move on to public hearing item 7E, 25ZC1, 82 Maple Avenue, map 17, lot 15, 00A. This is a zone change from R40 to R20. The owner, 82 Maple Avenue, LLC. And let's see, the public hearing was set for this evening. I'll entertain a motion to open the public hearing.
So I'll move.
Second.
Okay. We have a motion from, I'll say, Mr. Summers.
Yeah, might as well get
second from Mr. Longton. Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Anyone oppose? Anyone abstain? Public hearing is open. Meredith.
Meredith Badaluca for the record. Again, this is a zone change from the current zone of R40 to the proposed zone of R20. Both are residential zoning districts. The public hearing was noticed in the paper as required twice. The The background of this property is 82 Maple Avenue, currently has a single-family residence, a detached garage, and a shed on the property. In 2018, the Planning and Zoning Commission proposed a comprehensive change to the Town of Montville zoning map, at which time the property owner of 90 Maple, the abutting property, asked the commission to consider a zone change for 90 Maple from R40 to R20. The commission voted on September 25th, 2018, to include this addition with an effective date of October 15th, 2018. Planning and Zoning Commission voted on April 13th, 2021 to approve an 87-unit multifamily at 90 Maple Avenue. The applicant, 82 Maple Avenue LLC, has stated that they are requesting this zone change from R40 to R20 to render the same available for development for multifamily residential purposes. This parcel is abutted by 90 Maple Avenue to the northwest and I-395 to the southeast. As stated in the background above, 90 Maple had a zone change to the R20 and subsequently received approval for 87 multifamily dwelling units by this commission. Our zoning regulations, Section 9, R20 zoning district, and Section 8, R40 districts, have the same requirements for multifamily at 40 feet for the front and rear yards and 20 feet for the side yards. The minimum lot size for R20 is 20,000 square feet if the lot is served by public. R40 zoning district requires a minimum of 40,000 square feet. Another difference between the two zoning districts is that the maximum density requirement in the R20 district for multifamily is one dwelling unit per 10,000 square feet of lot area. The R40 zoning district does not have a maximum density. Zoning regulation section 411.5 multifamily dwellings states in part that the site has to be served by public water and public sewers unless an alternate septic is approved. Staff has confirmed with WPCA that both water and sewer are available for this parcel. The applicant indicated on the zone change application that the proposed zone change satisfies 6 evaluation criteria contained in the zone change evaluation criteria outline. This outline is not part of our regulations, however, it is included within the application documents on the Town of Montville website. I did list out the 6 criteria, and my comments are indicated in italics, and I will read them if you'd like. One, is the proposal in conformance with the plan of conservation and development? But more importantly, is it in conformance with the intent of the zoning regulations? In italics, I put, while this parcel is on the future land use map as job investment area, which includes infrastructure investment, commercial, light industrial, mixed use, municipal uses, it is important to note that this map was not updated as part of our 2022 update. With that being said, there has been changes to the abutting parcel as indicated above. Staff feels that this zone change is in conformance with the intent of the zoning regulations and consistent with the previous zone change and approvals in this area. Two, was the original classification given to this land inappropriate or improper? My response is, this parcel could have been given either classification. The parcels that front Maple Avenue in this area are currently zoned R20. Interior lots that abut parcels that front on Maple Avenue and Moxley Road are currently zoned R40. Also in your packet, there is a map that shows the zoning of each of the parcels next to it. Three, have there been major changes within the area involved which were not anticipated in the adopted plan of conservation, development, and comprehensive plan, zoning maps, and regulations, which have substantially altered the basic character of the area? As stated above, there was a zone change in 2018 and we are looking for the 87 multifamily units on the abutting property. Four, is the proposal going to benefit the community as a whole and not solely a particular individual or groups of individuals? Staff feels the proposed change to R20 will benefit the community as a whole, as there is a need for housing and the R20 zone has a density provision to allow for responsible development. Five, is the area suitable for the use and other uses permitted by right in the new zone, and will the change encourage the most appropriate use of the land in the public interest? The area is suitable for the proposed use of multifamily. The permitted uses for both the R20 and R40 zoning districts are the same, with the following exceptions: water-dependent uses, farms, and seasonal roadside stands for farm products are not permitted in the R20 zoning district. The R20 zoning district does allow for convalescent homes where the R40 does not. Six, does the proposal represent spot zoning? No, the properties that abut the parcel are zoned R20. This application was referred out to the building department, fire marshal, public works, WPCA, and police department on October 7th, 2025, and no comments have been received back. Again, this public hearing notice was noticed in the day paper on November 5th and November 12th as required. The applicant has notified the abutters as required and provided staff with the United States Postal Service Certificate of Mailing Firm Form stamped October 31st, 2025. Applicant's attorney, Harry Heller, is here.
Good evening. For the record, Harry Heller, 736 Route 32, Uncasville, representing the applicant, 82 Maple Avenue, LLC. In compliance with Connecticut law, the beneficial owner of that limited liability company is Horace Lindo, who was also the successful applicant before your commission with respect to the multifamily housing development at 90 Maple Avenue. This is an application for change of zoning district classification from R40 to R20. You will be acting in your legislative capacity in deliberating on this application, and in your legislative capacity, you have the broadest discretion allowed to a land use agency under Connecticut law to act in the best interests of the municipality, but in accordance with your comprehensive plan. As the staff report indicated, the first criteria to be considered by the commission in acting on a legislative change of zoning district classification is whether or not the proposal is in conformance with your comprehensive plan. And your comprehensive plan is embodied in your zoning regulations and your zoning map as they have developed over the course of history of zoning in the municipality. So I'm going to introduce into the record from 1976, which is the earliest one that I have. And yes, I was practicing law back then. but when you view this map, you'll notice that the predominant portion of this property along its interface with Interstate 395 was in the manufacturing zoning district classification. I would submit that that was probably an inappropriate zoning district classification because there was no water and there was no sewer in Maple Avenue at that time, and thus no manufacturing development ever occurred on the property in that zoning district classification. When the comprehensive rezoning of the entire town was accomplished in 1995 and 1996, the zoning district classification of this property was changed from the manufacturing zoning district classification to the R40 zoning district classification. I would submit to you that the zoning district classification as R40 at that time was an appropriate classification of this property because, again, municipal sewer and municipal water were not then available in Maple Avenue. Subsequently, sewer was installed, and because of the pollution problems in the Palmertown area, municipal water was extended up Maple Avenue, making available both public water and public sewer to this property. So the next consideration is whether or not there have been significant changes that warrant a change of zoning district classification. And one of the purposes of introducing the 1976 zoning map of the town is to demonstrate that zoning should not be static, but should be a dynamic vehicle to address the best needs of the municipality. And the fact that no manufacturing development occurred in that area over a period of 20 years was a good indicator that the zoning district classification of that property may have been improper. Now, the changes that have occurred that we submit to you warrant a change of zoning district classification from R40 to R20 are twofold. First is the installation of municipal water and sewer in Maple Avenue, which justify a higher density zoning classification, whether that be for multifamily development, as was approved on 90 Maple Avenue, or whether it be in a cluster design or some other form of more dense residential housing. The next criteria is whether or not the proposal benefits the community as a whole as well as the applicant. And we would submit that it does. And in your criteria for decisions, again, in your application instructions, but not in your regulations, you talk about whether or not the application is not only in conformance with the comprehensive plan, which is the legal test for acting on a zone change, but also whether or not it is in conformance with your plan of conservation and development. And in the 2022 update to your municipal plan of conservation and development, you have a section on community profile for housing. And the plan of conservation and development talks about the changing demographics that have occurred in Montville from 2000 to 2020, the fact that we may have more single-family housing than we need in town, and that there is a need to produce housing alternatives to meet the housing needs of the municipality, particularly in light of the fact that housing costs have skyrocketed and it is difficult to keep people not only in Montville, but in Connecticut because of the very exorbitant housing cost today. And the plan of conservation and development highlights the point that over 30% of the population in the municipality struggle to meet the financial burden of housing in the town. The plan of conservation and development also recommends that in areas where both municipal sewer and water are available, that you, as the legislative zoning authority in the town, consider lot sizes less than 10,000 square feet. So this proposal moving from R40 to R20 is consistent with that goal and is moving in the direction that is recommended by your plan of conservation and development. Also relevant is the affordable housing plan that was adopted by your commission in 2022. And the move to more dense housing development in areas where utilities and infrastructure are available are consistent with the recommendations contained in the Affordable Housing Plan. The final topic I'd like to address is whether or not the application constitutes spot zoning. Under Connecticut law, in order to have spot zoning, you have to satisfy two criteria. The first is that the area being rezoned is small and out of context with the neighborhood, and secondly, that it is inconsistent with the comprehensive plan that, again, is embodied in your zoning regulations and zoning map as they've developed over time. So in looking at the plan that was submitted with the zone change application, the areas that are in yellow are in the R40 zoning district classification. The areas in orange are in the R20 zoning district classification, and the purple is light industrial. So the property immediately to the west, which is the 90 Maple Avenue site, which was changed in 2018 from R40 to R20, abuts the property to the west. All of the properties to the south, extending down to the light industrial and manufacturing zoning districts, are already in the R20 zoning district classification. And the property is abutted to the east by Interstate 395. So we would submit that this is certainly not spot zoning. It is infill zoning, infilling this isolated R40 parcel to a zoning district classification which is consistent with the surrounding properties and therefore is in conformance with the comprehensive plan and does not constitute spot zoning. So for all of those reasons, we submit that this application complies with the requirements of Connecticut law and would urge the commission to approve the zone change. If you have any questions, I'll be glad to address them.
Any questions for Attorney Heller?
Time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Public hearing. We are going to go to the public. Is there anyone who would like to speak in favor of this application? Is there anyone who would like to speak in opposition to this zone change? Okay. Please state your name and address for the record.
Michelle Balcom, 89 Maple Avenue. And I haven't heard nothing mentioned about the water. There's wetlands over there. They haven't said nothing about drainage because I have a pipe in my backyard that I take drainage and I do not want any more drainage.
Let me just, this application, just to clarify for you, it is just for the zone change. Any development to take place will require a site plan approval with all those drainage items, et cetera, being addressed at that time. This is just strictly to change the zone. This is not approving any construction or any activity to move forward. Just, you know, to make that clear for you. Yeah. Okay.
Because, like I was going to say, there's no ice, like to put a driveway in, there's no eyesight. Is that on the other part too?
All those items have to be addressed mm-hmm. in the future site plan and construction development. Okay. All right. Okay. Thank you. Anyone else from the public like to speak in opposition to the application? Please come forward and state your name and address for the record. And again, just remember that this is just addressing the zone change. Okay, thank you.
My name is Mike Falcone. I live at 110 Maple Avenue. And I understand now what you're doing. You're just getting the zone change. I get that. So my only question right now is, so there'll be future hearings, like you said, for construction and all that, right?
The site plans, there's notifications, there's times the comment to staff, et cetera.
Okay. So we're in opposition to this. This is not the time to do it.
Correct.
Right. For the building.
Well, your comments should be strictly to the zone change for any legal reason why it shouldn't be changed.
Okay.
It has nothing to do with the site development at this time.
Okay. I guess I'm done. Thank you, Peter.
Nope, you're welcome. Thank you.
Say that there's not going to be enough, not enough property or land to for the frontage of the buildings that's putting in, or they want to put in.
That'll all have to be reviewed at the time, should any development come forward. It has to be reviewed by our meet the zoning regulations for whatever they're building, and it would have to come under the review of the town engineer, public works, drainage. Meet all the requirements of the state of Connecticut for stormwater discharge, stormwater retention, et cetera. But that's at another phase, not at this.
But they're trying to make smaller lots and areas, right? So they can put more lots.
There's multiple opportunities, and you'd have to look at our zoning regulations to see what's allowed in that R20 zone. It could be lots. It could be multifamily. It could be anything that fits in that R20 zone. At this time, there's no designated final project here. We're not approving a project. We're just changing a zone.
How can you approve that if you don't know what's going to be there to say, if you agree with the, like the frontage and the backage and stuff?
Dennis, you chime in at any moment, please.
I mean, if you change it now and later on, you can't change it back.
For the record, Dennis Godere, the director of planning, to reiterate what the chairman has said, there is no proposed development. They're not showing any proposed houses. The staff report went through the differences in the types of uses that can be allowed. They're basically the same, as the commission knows. I think the two biggest differences is that, yes, if this was to be approved to go to the R20, there could be smaller, more lots, because there would be smaller minimum lot sizes. The other side of that coin is there is a density cap on multifamily. If multifamily is proposed in the R20, in the R40, there's no reference to any type of density. So if it stayed in the R40, there could be more multifamily than there would be in an R20. But at this point, ma'am, there's no proposal for development. That would be later down the road if they, the landowner or an applicant so chooses.
Okay. Anyone else would like to speak in opposition to this zone change application?
Or have a question.
Would anyone like to speak in favor of the zone change application? Would anyone like to speak in opposition to the zone change application? Is that number two or three? Would anyone like to speak in favor of the zone change application? And last call, anyone like to speak in opposition to the zone change application? Staff, Dennis, Meredith, any further comments? Attorney Heller.
Again, for the record, Harry Heller. I just point out to the commission, because this is a legislative change, we are not proposing any development. In considering the application, you are considering whether or not the zoning district classification is appropriate for any use that may be permitted in that zone.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Thanks for the clarification. Any questions for the applicant's attorney from the commission members? Any questions from staff?
A clarification for me. I'm asking to be educated here.
Okay.
My understanding is that when someone requests a change of zone, that as long as everything complies with state statute and our plan of development, that we have no legal recourse to deny it. Is that correct?
That's correct.
I
Okay, I would, go ahead.
Also, you people said when they, okay, they want to go from R40 to R20, which is about a half an acre. What it means is R20, that's the minimum accepted standard. That means lot can be no smaller than 20 solid square feet. If you want to sell a lot that's larger, fine and dandy, but the minimum is 20 solid. That's the minimum standard.
At face value of our zoning regulations, that's correct.
Yeah.
Any other questions?
Mr. Chairman, if I may.
You may.
Just so there's no misunderstanding, cluster subdivisions are allowable in the R20 zoning district.
We just approved one.
You just approved one, that's right. So lot size can be reduced with water and sewer to 10,000 square feet, but overall density cannot be increased.
Yeah,
correct.
Yeah.
Just in case we pursue that avenue.
Yeah.
That's how you get more open space around it, right. Buffer zones.
Thank you. I'll entertain a motion to close the public hearing.
Who moved?
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Anyone oppose? Anyone abstain? The public hearing is closed. We're going to, there is a draft motion in the staff report.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So this is discussion and decision on 82 Maple Avenue, the map 17, lot 1500A, and Commissioner
Longton.
I make a motion to approve the application 25ZC1 with the following findings. Reasons for approval and effective date of December 8, 2025. Must date findings per Connecticut General Statutes 8-3B. Suggested findings. With the documents provided as part of the application and based on the Commission's assessment of the hearing record and the relevant factors, the Commission finds the application to be generally consistent with the Montfo plan of development. The zoning map amendment will not conflict with or undermine the town's comprehensive plan or otherwise compromise orderly development objectives. Should the commission vote to deny the application, it shall state its reasons for the record.
So we have a motion. We have a second.
Second.
Motion and a second. Any discussion on the motion? Mr. Secretary, roll call.
Okay. Commissioner Longton.
Favor.
Yes. Commissioner Terry.
Favor.
Yes. Commissioner Gillette is not here. Commissioner Pike is not here. Commissioner Jardins, yes. Commissioner Lindsay is not here. Commissioner Kublik.
In favor.
Commissioner Summers.
In favor.
And Chairman Senior.
In favor.
All in favor.
Thank you very much. Okay. All right, moving along, agenda item 8, old business. We have none this evening. On the new business, agenda item 9A, we have a site plan application for 2227 Route 32, 103-092-000. This is a redevelopment of site for mixed use. The owner applicant is Uncasville Property LLC, and the applicant has requested that this be continued until the December 9th meeting. Staff has provided them with some technical review comments. The town engineer has provided comments, and we're expecting comments from Public Works and the fire marshal. So I would entertain a motion to continue this item until the December 9th meeting.
So moved.
Second.
All right, we got one from Mr. Kobluk, and I'll take a second from Commissioner Longton. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Anyone oppose? Anyone abstain? That is continued.
How much for that?
Okay. Takes us to 9B, site plan application, 25 site 9-1604. Old Colchester Road, map 50, lot 17, 000. This is for a 60-foot by 40-foot Quonset hut. The owner applicant is Perry Waite. Meredith, what do we have?
As you stated, this is for a 60 by 40 Quonset hut, which is 2,400 square feet. The parcel was created in 1968 as part of the Fryer subdivision. It's currently improved with a single family dwelling, a detached 20 foot by 24 foot garage, and a 30 by 12 foot shed. Since this accessory structure is over 1,200 square feet, it requires that it come before this commission for approval. Again, it's a total of 2,400 square feet. The property is in the R80 zoning district, and it does meet all of the setback requirements for the R80 zoning district, and as shown on the attached plan that you have before you. This was referred out to the building department, who has no adverse comments. A building permit will be required. It was referred out to Uncas Health. No comments from Uncas Health. They did provide the applicant with a B100A application, and that was approved on 9/29/25. It was referred to the fire marshal. The fire marshal's office does not have objections to the hut, as the fire marshal's office cannot take any enforcement action on private residence property. We would like to know what the hut's intended use is for pre-planning emergencies on the property. We ask that the resident have a fire extinguisher mounted on the wall in the building and kept clearly accessible at all times, just in case of emergencies. The property owner is here. If you have any questions for him, I'll have him come up to the podium.
Okay.
Or if you have any further questions for myself.
And this is in consistent accessory use to the residence, correct?
Our shop. Stacy and I did go out and do a inspection of the property on November 14th, and I did put a few pictures in your staff report so you can see what's on the property and the general area of where they'll be placing the Quonset hut.
Okay. Any questions for the applicant?
He's here to speak.
Strictly in harmony with your residential use?
Correct. Yes.
Yep.
Okay. Got to ask that when you...
That's the number one criteria.
Okay.
And I did I did email Fire Marshal, too, with that information. Some of the items that would be storing in there and whatnot, so they have an idea if case they ever had to respond.
And just for the record, state your name and address.
I'm Perry Waite. I live at 1604 Old Colchester Road in Oakdale.
Thank you very much. Okay, any other questions for the applicant? All right, I'm sure we have a draft motion. Commissioner Terry?
I make a motion to approve application 25 site 9 to construct a 40-foot by 60-foot, 2,400-square-foot Quonset hut as an accessory structure to the single-family residence in accordance with the Montville zoning regulations and the application, supporting documentation, and a plan set entitled Existing Site Plan 1604 Old Colchester Road, Oakdale, Connecticut, 06370, prepared by CLA Engineers Incorporated, dated October 2025.
Okay, thank you. We have a motion.
I'll second that motion.
We have a second from Commissioner Fitzjardins. And all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Anyone oppose? Anyone abstain? Okay, we have some 824 reviews to address this evening. So under our new business, item 9C, we have an 824 review for the sale of 20 Bridge Street. Map 82, Lot 80. We'll need to state reasons on the record for favorable or unfavorable. We need to state them for the if for some reason we determine this is unfavorable. So in your package, we should have, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's see.
Sale of 20 Bridge Street. Meredith, at any time, fire right in and give us the background.
Staff received a request for an 824 review and report to the Town Council for the sale of 20 Bridge Street from Mayor Bunnell on September 26, 2025. The mayor stated in his request the town may be interested in putting up for sale town-owned property at 20 Bridge Street. Please initiate the required 824 review at your earliest convenience. This is in conjunction with the property at 8, 14, and 22 Bridge Street. The background for this, per the field card, the town of Montville, in parentheses, Public Works Row, obtained ownership of this parcel on March 12, 1932. In 1996, the then assistant planner, Tom Saunders, received some drainage complaints that this parcel was draining onto 14 Bridge Street. He forwarded a letter to the mayor, which is attached. I attached it because it gives some history and some background on the property.
Mm-hmm.
He also referred it to Public Works Director, and the mayor referred the matter to the town attorney at that time. In August 21st, 1996, Assistant Planner Saunders did a memo to the Public Works Subcommittee, in which he indicated the town acquired the property sometime in the 30s, appears that the reason for the acquisition was to access the Palmer House, which was used for a school and library in the past. Neither structure exists today.
Mm.
It's also his opinion at that time that this parcel may no longer be needed by the town. However, there were some legal questions that were being addressed by the town attorney at that time. February 22nd, 2022, the other parcels that I mentioned, 8, 14, and 22 Bridge Street, there was an 824 review completed, and the PZC voted to send a favorable report to the Town Council. The parcel in question at 20 Bridge Street consists of 0.23 acres. It's located in the Light Industrial Zoning District. The frontage and width of the parcel is approximately 15 feet wide. The GIS does show an intermittent stream to the rear of the parcel. The state wetlands layer indicates the rear of the parcel to be alluvial and floodplain soils, and a portion of the property is located within flood zone AE. There are GIS maps attached to your packet, so you can see the state wetlands layer and the flood layer. The minimum requirements of the Light Industrial Zoning District, lot size would be 40,000 square feet, frontage 100 feet, front yard setback is 50 feet, side yard setbacks are 30 feet, rear yard setback to residential would be 50 feet or 30 feet to commercial or industrial. Given the lot, the size and the layout of this parcel, it does not meet our zoning requirements of the Light Industrial District. Therefore, should the commission decide to recommend a favorable report to the town council, staff would recommend that the parcel be conveyed with 8, 14, and 22 Bridge Street. And as part of any site plan approval for future development, that the parcels shall be combined. Staff further recommends that the commission consider requesting an easement in favor of the town of Montville for any future trail projects, which you'll hear about today's. This has been referred out to Public Works. No comment from them. The town engineer has one comment. There is a stormwater infrastructure across this property. CLA would recommend that the town retain drainage easements and easements for access to the infrastructure prior to sale. WPCA has no objections. Assessor's office has no comments at this time. The fire marshal's office does not object to the sale of this property. The Montville Fire Service and fire marshal's office would like to continue using the property to access emergency water source at the rear of the property. The building department has no adverse comments. The police department has no comments at this time.
Okay. All right. everyone have an understanding of what our role is here?
Mm-hmm.
We're sending an opinion to the town council, favorable or unfavorable.
Mm-hmm.
Any questions for staff regarding?
Go ahead.
Yes.
We'll start here with.
Is this the property that the building is was capped off for the contaminated?
This parcel, no. That is 14 Bridge Street. This is the small sliver.
It's just
that runs.
This driveway going down the side of the property.
That's all we're talking about.
Oh, okay.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Well, that's what I was wondering. I said, is it a building or some other place there?
Well, it's just that. It's that strip down the side.
Well, you must have somebody who wants to buy it.
I'm reiterating what was in your report that I feel it should be combined to the other properties, not sold like we've done in the past as an individual parcel that can't do have anything on it. It creates issues down the road. We have
mm-hmm.
some of them on Route 163 with the property that was sold to Mr. Jakobowitz that didn't work out, should have never sold it. you know, we have to be careful selling,
mm-hmm.
you know, non-compliant parcels that just end up in someone creating a nightmare.
Should
you choose to do a favorable, that could be included to the town council as your opinion.
Mm.
So what would they do with this strip?
The town owns this.
Yeah.
The town owns this. The town owns this.
Right.
But they.
They want to sell that?
Who are you going to sell it to?
But why would we do that? Wouldn't that behoove us to keep that?
The reality is that probably one person would purchase all of them.
Right. Yeah, one.
They could buy it just to hand over a little sliver of land.
Yeah, from Bowling Alley.
This has never received an 824 review for disposal.
I got it.
The others have.
I got it. It was submitted. Okay.
So, you know.
So your recommendation could be that they're all
in a condition that it's combined with the other parcels.
And the suggestion of an easement or right of passage for any
maintaining. Yes. Right away, easement, et cetera, for that purpose.
And maybe not to remember, you know, use the land, flexibility, maybe it's not there, but to have some passage as that original strip had intended, maybe it takes a different configuration.
Mm-hmm. And to be clear, the 824 that we vote on is a recommendation.
It's a recommendation.
It's just a recommendation, but to the town council. But should the town council decide to act in opposition to our recommendation, they require a 60% vote.
If we do a non-favorable.
If I may, and the state statute says your action is to approve or disapprove. Those exact words. And if you disapprove, the town council has to have a majority vote, two-thirds vote.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Two-thirds vote.
All right.
Yep.
Again, I would be in favor providing as a condition it's combined to the other properties, and we maintain the ability to have a right of way
for the drainage.
Future trail, et cetera, accesses, which we'll have more discussion on later this evening. That would be my suggestion.
Do you want to include Kyle's comment about the drainage?
Absolutely.
Yes.
And the fire marshals about access.
I'd like to incorporate the staff report as part of our favorable recommendation, which covers that, I believe. you have that included in there, also the right-of-way, correct?
Yep, okay. So I will attach this to any paperwork.
So I'll entertain a motion to send a favorable review per the comments of the staff report for 20 Bridge Street.
So moved.
Motion that we do that, incorporating the staff comments.
So we have a motion.
Second.
Second.
A second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Anyone oppose? Anyone abstain? Favorable review granted from us per the comments. Okay, the second one we have this evening is 9D under our new business, 824 review for the sale of Route 82, Map 58, Lot 27. Mm-hmm. Again, Meredith, please.
I just want to be clear that this is a vacant parcel.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's not the road, it's a vacant parcel. Staff received a request for an 824 review and report to the town council for the sale of Route 82, parcel ID 058027000 from Mayor Bunnell on November 4th, 2025. The mayor stated in his request, a town resident has expressed interest in this property that is mostly wet, in parentheses 4.5 acres. Unless someone knows otherwise, I don't see it as of value to the town as it is. To get it back on the town roll tax rolls, could you have the process started for an 824 review? During my research, the property card indicated that the town of Mottville obtained the ownership of this parcel on March 13th, 2007, and it was recorded on volume 505, page 487. The parcel consists of approximately 4.5 acres, is located within the residential zoning district, WRP 160. Per the GIS, there's approximately 862 feet of frontage on Route 82, with one side yard of approximately 998.59 feet, and the rear yard is approximately 896 feet. The other side yard goes into a point. There is a picture of the parcel layout in your staff report so you can get an idea of what it looks like. The state layers wetlands of the GIS indicates a large portion of the property as being very poorly drained soils. It also indicates a stream to the southwest of the parcel, another to the north, and another along the frontage on Route 82. The minimum requirements of Section 5 WRP 160, lot size of 160,000 square feet, frontage of 200 feet, front yard setback of 75 feet, side yard of 30 feet, rear yard setback of 75 feet. Additionally, in the WRP 160 zone, the location of any building needs to be 75 feet from the wetlands, which is more than our wetlands regulation of 50 feet. Given the layout of the parcel and the wetlands, it appears that prior to any development, an applicant may need approval from the Inland Wetlands Commission and possibly a variance from the Zoning Board of Appeals. The parcel is located within the residential lots greater than 80,000 square feet on the future land use map and our POCD. CEO Radford and myself did do an inspection of this site on November 12, 2025, and I did attach some photos, and I put blue arrows indicating where we saw water when we were on site. It's a little hard to see the water in the pictures, so I was trying to give you an idea of that. This was referred out to the town engineer, who did not have any comments on this. The building department had no adverse comments on this review. Fire Marshal's office had no comments or objections. The assessor's office had no comments. WPCA has no comments or objections. The Mottville Police Department had no comments. Public Works had no comments.
Okay, thank you. So
You familiar where this is located? Ed's Tire Sales, Ed's Used Cars, right around the corner.
Gas station there.
Yeah.
This is where Ed's Country Sales used to be.
This particular site.
Is Maynard Road. I know that road well.
I know you do.
If you want, I can start off with, I have a concern, because with the amount of wetlands, and if we sell this, it's going to go on the tax rolls as a buildable lot by the assessor, which means a higher tax rate. And it's going to be very difficult to build on here with the amount of wetlands and the sightline issues. So that could turn into a future legal matter.
And again, to address that, what you're saying, I think, again, in this situation, it should be noted, if this is being sold to an abutter and it's adding additional acreage, I don't think the tax implications are much,
right,
based on how much of it's underwater.
Right.
Number one. I just think if the town moves forward selling this, a comment should be that we are not implying approval of anything. We're not calling this a building lot. We're not calling it. I mean, it may fit description by certain sizes, but we're not making any representation that this is buildable. Because based on a quick look, it doesn't come close.
Yeah.
So I just think that needs to be stated clearly, if it's to be sold. Again, so we don't end up in a situation where someone starts carving a driveway in and
future litigation
on your desk every week wondering
why
they can't build on it.
No, this is just town property, which is of no value to the town.
In this case, I would say this has no value.
Better put it back on a tax roll.
So can we add those?
Yep, and would you like me to attach the staff report as well?
Attach the staff report and just, again, we're giving no certification representation that this is
usable,
buildable lot.
It's actually
by any means.
It's actually one of the feeder streams for Gunners Lake.
Yeah.
Yes. That's correct. Entertain a motion to. Go ahead.
I make a motion to forward a favorable report in accordance with Connecticut General Statutes 8-24 to the Town Council for the sale of Route 82 Parcel ID 058-027-000.
Including staff report.
Including staff report.
Okay, you have a motion and a second.
I'll second that.
Oh, I got Ms. Terriori. He had already got you. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone oppose? Anyone abstain? Okay. A D, favorable. We're going to move on to 9E, 824 review for the sale of Gay Hill Road, map 77, lot 39. Go right ahead, Meredith.
Again, this is for a vacant parcel on Gay Hill Road. It's not the road. And staff received a request for an 824 review and report to the Town Council for the sale of Gay Hill Road, parcel ID 077-039-000 from Mayor Bunnell on November 6, 2025. The mayor stated in his request, this small piece of town-owned property is landlocked and used to hold a water tower for water supply to Palmer School. There is interest in purchasing it. Please initiate an 8-24 review. During my research, the assessor field card indicated that the town acquired this parcel on March 12, 1932. The warranty deed further describes the use of the water tank for the mill buildings and hydrants. The Public Works Director, John Carlson, has informed the staff that the town crushed the water tank and it was filled in by a local contractor, and he believes in the 90s. Ron McDaniel, WPCA Administrator, has confirmed that the Palmer School is currently on public water for potable water and fire protection. CEO Radford and myself went and did a site inspection on November 12th, 2025, and we did attach pictures from that vacant lot and an aerial overview from our new program NEAR maps. This parcel consists of 0.19 acres, is located within the R20 zoning district. There is no frontage on Gay Hill Road. Per the warranty deed, book 43, page 298, this parcel has a right-of-way over a strip of land 20 feet in width extending from this track to Gay Hill Road. The parcel is approximately 102.8 feet by 83.7 feet by 102.8 feet by 86 feet. This parcel would be considered an interior lot and would require 1.5 times the required front yard setback. The minimum requirements of Section 9 R20 district is 20,000 square feet for single family dwellings if the lot is served by public sewers. If served by public if not served by public sewers, the minimum lot size is 40,000 square feet. I did confirm with WPCA that sewer would be available. The frontage is requirements is 80 feet. The front yard setback is 40 feet. However, interior lots require a minimum of 60 feet. Side yard setback is 10 feet and the rear yard setback is 40 feet. This parcel does not meet all of the minimum zoning requirements of the R20 zoning district listed above. Therefore, it appears to be a pre-existing non-conforming lot, which would need to be confirmed by a title search. Prior to development, the applicant may require a variance from the Zoning Board of Appeals, depending on what they're looking to put on the parcel. This parcel is located within the housing investment area on the future land map in the 2022 POCD, which includes lots equal to 20,000 square feet or less than 20,000 square feet. It was referred out to the building department. They have no adverse comments for the property. The fire marshal's office had some questions. They were answered and they have no objections. The assessor has no objections. WPCA has no objections. They did confirm again that Palmer School is on public water. And the police department had no comments or concerns. Town engineer had no comments. Public Works commented that they crushed the water tank on the land.
Meredith, could you identify on here where that property is?
Yeah. I don't really know where that is.
This is Gay Hill. Yep. You come up the long driveway.
So it's right in this area here?
Yes. Yep. Right on the bend.
Okay, so that will be an interior lot.
The lot as it exists does not comply with.
It would probably need to be combined with it.
Yeah, Bobby is
ready. Our town attorney would tell us that we cannot, without a title search, JC and I and Dennis are not allowed to say a lot is pre existing non conforming.
Mm-hmm.
However, given when this lot was conveyed, it was there before zoning regulations, so it would be a pre-existing non-conformity.
So where
so
is it?
It would be able to build on it.
So where is it on this?
Does the area of the prior water tank sit in what would be a buildable area? Or is it hard to tell?
Hard to tell. And they may need a zoning variance depending on the size of, depending on what they wanted to do, the size of the structure.
Any other questions? My thought, I don't think this is going to change the town financially to sell it. I think if it can be sold to an abutter and added to those properties, I would be in favor of disposing of it. But to sell it on its own, I would say keep it.
Yeah.
I just think it's food for
lawsuit
problems. It's Dennis. Any
no,
thoughts?
No, you know, as I described before, the disapproval of the require two-thirds vote. You also have to state the reasons. So
yeah.
For those reasons, for your concerns, if you express if that's something that you know, want to disapprove it.
I would want those conditions. I think it, my opinion, it should be sold to an abutter, and
or divided among the abutters,
or either or. We make no representation that it is a buildable lot. I mean, yeah. I just hate to see us go down that road again.
Yeah.
And
yep,
we have a couple of those situations right now, and they're not pretty.
At this point, we can't say that that parcel has no value to the town. It might.
Like for what?
You never know. Yeah, down the road, pump station, lift station.
We need to do
the title
searches, and we need to get through all that stuff first. What is the status of that land?
Probably not in a spot where it would be a pump station for sewer or water, but I just look at how much there is to gain versus how much headache it can potentially introduce. Favorable with those conditions, in my opinion, if that's everybody is in agreement.
Oh, yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, so. Mm-hmm.
So
favorable to sell to a butter.
Butter. Mm-hmm. And again, no representation that it's.
Yeah.
Or to be divided among several abutters.
It could be split.
Yeah.
As long as
recommendation is to go to abutters.
Yeah.
Split it down the middle.
Yeah, especially if you're going to make a lot, or you call it and if you have a lot that's too small, then you put it together, now it's a conforming lot.
All right. So I'll entertain a motion.
So moved.
Second from Ms. Terry. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone oppose? Anyone abstain? Okay. 9F, adoption of the 2026 meeting schedule.
Okey-dokey-dokey.
A motion to accept these meeting dates for 2026.
Second.
We have a motion from Commissioner Longton, a second from Commissioner Terry. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone oppose? Anyone abstain? We approve the meeting schedule. Okay. That time of the year, election time, election of officers. I would open it to the commission for nominations for chairperson, vice chair, secretary.
I make a motion. We nominate Bill Pena as chairman.
Second.
Planning and zoning.
Any other nominations for the chair? All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone oppose? Anyone abstain? Vice chair.
Well, is Wills is not here? Does he want it back?
I would.
I make a motion. We appoint Wills Pike as vice chair of planning and zoning.
I'll second that.
Okay. Hearing any other nominations?
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Anyone oppose? Anyone abstain?
I make a motion we appoint John DeSardins as secretary for the planning and zoning.
Second.
All right, we have a motion and a second. Anyone else? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
And I like
oppose?
That.
Anyone abstain? Thanks, John. All right. 9H, grant support, resolution for the Connecticut Recreational Trails Grant, Uncasville Multi-Use Trail, Blue Way Feasibility Study.
Ooh.
In your packet, there was a letter that was addressed to the town council before the last Monday. They had the resolution to authorize the submission of this application. The intent is to study the feasibility of the multi-use path from the school shed, Camp Oakdale area, leading down the 163 out the box of the corridor, crossing over under 395 through somehow get over on the other side of 32, and then also down to the river, leading towards the Gold Watch River, where it's being renovated in the addition here, and then from there also study the possibility of a new way to the Clean Water Trail for a path. So it's the equivalent of the Greenway, right? The council did approve that resolution. This application is due on the 18th. I am requesting the commission to provide a letter of support with the chairman's signature. I did provide that via email today. I don't know if you guys saw that or not. I can read it in the record if you want. Authorizing the support of that in the letter, especially reiterates what is in the document that I provided, you know, what the goal objectives are, why I support it, consistency with the POC did, et cetera, et cetera. That would be great. If you can make a motion, if we can just attach the meeting minutes that it was supported for having that letter, so we can go a long way and get further from your getting letters from the community and tribe sector, which is about the Connecticut enterprise region.
Just for the record, what is the purpose of the trail?
A multi-use trail is about a 10-foot-wide paved path that would accommodate various modes of like cycling, walking, running, skateboarding, rollerblading,
recreational. Thank you.
Is this a good time to mention to the commission the Thursday meeting?
I'll bring it up later.
All right, so we can bring it up later. Well, there'll be more information regarding
these.
Okay.
Two,
so I'll entertain a motion for us to provide support, sign the letter for this grant support, 9H.
So moved.
Second.
Motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Anyone oppose? Anyone abstain? Very good. 9I, another grant support, Resolution Community Investment Fund, Round 8. It's a planning grant to support the Montville Town Center plan and implementation strategy. Dennis.
So as you may recall, the Round 5 grant was submitted a couple years ago, and, or a year or so ago, and the town was awarded, and that is funding the Route 163 and 32 divide and redo study. This is the eighth round, so a couple rounds later, they still have money. They anticipate and have more money to continue this effort, so we are looking to submit to fund additional planning that starts to implement some of the initial recommendations that are coming out of the Route 32 study. Initial recommendation is what they call, we've identified now something kind of 11 nodes, but initially they had 6 nodes of significance. This area here where Town Hall is, Route 32, mm-hmm. this 163-32 intersection, I think it's called Node 1. So that was, and it doesn't necessarily mean the most important, but it just happened to be a big number. So the intent is to study further this core area to start identifying how to make it to the town center for the town model. And this will be streetscape, will be at the intersection of 163 and 32, how that trail can get through that intersection as well, creating a town green, but it's also looking at the infrastructure of the 4 buildings on the campus and planning long-term what the capital needs are for ensuring that these buildings are being functional and viable for supporting the community in the years to come. And that would be included in sort of community, CIP, not CIF, but capital improvement. Town Council on Friday at a special meeting will be considering appropriating $307,000 to directly designated to replace the boiler here in Town Hall, which, as far as we know, hasn't been replaced in maybe 50 years or more. So the Town Hall was renovated in 2000, 2001. Mm-hmm. Boiler remained, I think. The grant will also develop on specifications and design plans to go up to bid to replace the boiler in the town. So we're telling the state, you give us a 250 to help with that planning and design, we're going to pony up $37,000 as well above the line to help. So I think it shows good faith. So again, looking for support for that as well. There was a letter that was emailed out your endorsement for the chair to do the design plan.
Okay. Entertain a motion to provide that support.
So moved.
Second.
Motion and a second.
Discussion.
Any discussion?
Yes.
Yes, sir.
Dennis, I kind of got lost a little bit when you were talking about the funding. In your letter to the council chairman, you said the staff request the town council consider appropriating $347,000 previously identified for roof and boiler repairs. Have those repairs been done or not?
No.
Okay. So what? So this, those repairs would go away to take this money? Would you take this money away from that?
No. So
that's what I got lost.
At that meeting on last Monday, the council was not comfortable adding that into the motion that was drafted, so they approved that motion, but they requested to come back for a special meeting to incorporate that into the resolution. We had some more due diligence internally. We had done and some more investigations to identify where that money is. And that's where this new resolution has been drafted and will be considered Friday.
So this is $347,000 that has already been earmarked.
It will be earmarked in the amount of
$307,000. 307? Okay, this says 47.
Yeah, it did say 47. That was our understanding at the time. It's 307.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Anyone oppose? Anyone abstain? Okay, I'll take care of that support. Adaptive reuse regulation discussion. Dennis?
Okay.
You're up again.
This is like really fun stuff. We'll keep you awake.
Yeah, I can see that.
We'll talk about this right here.
Okay. So, an adaptive reuse zoning regulation is a tool that a number of communities use to help challenge properties to become viable properties that can be reused. Try not to reuse the same word, but to get them back out in a functional and a lot of times you have a brownfield site, you might have special circumstances where the costs are very, very high to clean the site, but the underlying zoning might not allow the density, whether it be residential or some kind of commercial use, to help pay back the return that a developer or property owner needs to investigate and clean up. Even with grant money and subsidies from the state, sometimes they need that extra incentive to make it viable. Mm-hmm. It could be a historic building that maybe just does not have the infrastructure inside of the floor plan, so it needs more renovation, or it's an older building that's just been sitting around and hasn't been used in a long time, so it's deteriorating and looking for that. So a number of communities have adopted this adaptive reuse approach. Locally, when I was involved in the town of Waterford, they just looked at a model after the town of Waterford and adopted one about 10 years ago, the same in the city of Groton. They adopted one, I think, that's smaller lots, and I think you get them for the folks who had to be recently owned or currently owned by the government or the city.
Right.
This is a little bit more on the broad side. This goes into the parcels we talked about, Bridge Street, which is 24, this could be used, as well. This goes into the revitalization of those areas of 163 and 32. Mm-hmm. So there might be, you know, parcels of buildings that have been sitting vacant for a substantial amount of time, mm-hmm. and this makes it a little more attractive. This is more flexible than the OZ zone. The OZ zone reverts back to using the bulk standards. This comes back and says, forget about the bulk standards. You basically have a clean palette. Mm-hmm. How you see fit. There's no density cap on residential or commercial. Individual bulk standards. But it's done under a special permit. And because this commission very broad. Reach of regulated decision with conditions to reduce density or if you just felt really uncomfortable with something, then you could need to pass it on because it falls into the special permit criteria. This would require some new definitions, and I'm proposing this to be allowed within the C1, the C2, the industrial, light industrial, the R20M, the R20, R40. But it had to be along certain areas, 163 and 32. That's like at a high level. I can go through this in a little bit more detail. And town council, commentary, did review this in comments yesterday, which is distributed tonight. So that's why it wasn't in the agenda back last week. Before I go into some of the
now, you mentioned special permit. This is going to be reviewed and compared against House Bill 8002 that just passed. That bill eliminated a lot of reuse structures being converted to dwellings. Took the special permit provisions out. I think it took it out. The bill is 104 pages, so it's so there's a lot of things in there that need to be reviewed to see if this is in conflict.
Good question. We'll look back at that one, but I thought it had more to do with that option before.
So this would allow us to find ways to make properties that have potential but aren't, but can't live up to it, to be able to find a way to make them viable.
Yes.
For example, and this is just the thought that came into my head. This is not a proposal. On Meeting House Lane is the Congregational Church there. There hasn't been a human being in that building for decades except members of the Department of Public Works to paint it and fix it. You know, would this open a door to being able to do something with that property?
The way this is drafted now, not for that site, because I drafted this to be specific to all of Route 32 from town line to town line, and then 63 from Route 32 out towards Chesterfield, the east side of Chesterfield. That's where I drew the line. And that was just me throwing it out there, looking for input. There could be a way to perhaps incorporate that site or other areas.
Yeah, for example, where the McDonald's was that just closed down, what are they going to do with that piece of property? With the old Cumberland Farms, what are they going to do with that piece of property? Not just head there and rot away. Make sure you get it right now.
Well, those are privately owned.
Yeah, they're privately owned, but, you know, hey, it needs to be put up there. We've got people up there who say, well, I see it as abandoned businesses, you know. That's not, that doesn't look good for the town, you know.
I hear people all the time say the town should do this with that property. The town.
Well, the town can't do anything.
The town can't do anything.
I know they can't do it, but they give suggestions to the owners. Say, hey.
this one, for some of those buildings, like at least the McDonald's, because I don't know how we define this, I'll have to look at it some more. But that would fall under underutilized buildings.
Yeah, underutilized. Yeah.
So underutilized buildings. Under our definition, the proposed would be 50 years or older within the R20, R20F, or R40 zone. And I have a reason for that, I'll explain that in a moment. Or 25 years or older when they're in a commercial or industrial district. And then each of the above instances, at least 50% of the gross building area shall have been vacant for 5 years.
What? Carmel Farms?
Probably a year.
Carmel Farms been that was about, that's over 5 years. Yeah. That's about a year or two.
All right, so our action on this, Dennis, is to, number one, study a little bit more about it from the commission's end. And
this is homework.
Get it on the agenda for a December meeting to.
We were hopeful to get it as an application. This will be a commission's application. So to bring it forth. File the application so you will receive it on the 8th of December. You can send it out as a referral and then set the public hearing to open the end of December.
Okay.
What I'm sensing here is there's probably some more discussion that needs to happen
we'll check Mr. Summers' concern regarding the House bill, if there's any conflict, and...
I got another one, too, and it came up probably a year or so ago, the definition of structure in the zoning regulations. It creates a lot of headaches, because it says, see building code. Well, depending on who you have in the office, that applies to everything or certain things. I think it needs a little clearer definition. Because personally, somebody replacing a condenser shouldn't have to get a zoning permit. But the way it's being interpreted, they go through zoning.
Okay.
Yeah.
We can.
It's a waste of
tax clarification money. Of our definitions pertaining to zoning. So, any further information you can get out to commission members?
You could come back on the 8th, get something refined. Mm-hmm. Looking at the C, January, February. Mm-hmm. I just now that there's a little bit more that we need to discuss based on a couple of these comments. Mm-hmm. Just changing definition of structure, you have to evaluate that.
Right.
I think it's could be a very useful tool.
Yeah. Yeah.
On the surface, it sounds good.
Yeah, but I agree.
We really need to look at it.
I do, because there's so much flexibility here, I added in here a preliminary review to encourage, which is very common for an applicant to come in front of the commission, get your feedback informally, non-binding. You can say, I want it, and then they come back with an application. I wanted to put that in there.
Okay.
The adaptive reuse eligibility criteria has set it up so there's two criteria that you have to meet. So the first one is on page 3. The location, the property must meet each of the following. So this is where I'm saying you've got to meet 1, 2, and 3. But then on top of that, you have to just meet one of the following, being the first structure. The commission makes a determination that's under rule on it. So this goes into the Donald site or the Delta Building site. Or it's classified or had been classified as a brownfield. And it had been classified or was classified as a brownfield because somebody might have taken the time and effort and dollars to clean up a site. Now it's ready to go. You're trying to sell it, but they need to get a certain amount of money back. There's some subjective gray areas here, but so there's that to consider. The uses, and then other one is the criteria of decision, because it's a special permit. Has a little bit more specific here, and I would like to add to the reviews on page 6, item P. Suggest that you have more discretion on the amount of density that somebody, density or intensity that somebody might be proposing, so it doesn't become too incompatible. So, but the criteria of decisions on top of the special permit criteria that's already in the regulations. So it's another layer. I don't want to necessarily add another layer, but it, some of these have to do with design. Controls from a design assessment regulations or encouraging.
Okay.
I
think general consensus is we want to move forward. And I Okay. Any more, Dennis?
No. Compared to the old days, it is.
Stacy, zoning matters.
So what matters?
Yes, it does.
There's light at the end of this tunnel.
Okay. So, Stacy Radford, zoning and wetlands officer, for the record. This is the report for the period of October 28, 2025 through November 17, 2025. There were a total number of 226 inquiries. Total number of open zoning permits at the beginning of this reporting period were 440. There were 16 certificates of zoning compliance that were issued with field inspections, so closed permits. There were closed permits, seven closed permits that no certificate of zoning compliance was necessary. We've conducted 21 field inspections. I issued 15 new zoning permits, leaving a total number of current zoning permits open of 432. I have one new zoning complaint, 15 ongoing complaints. Two zoning complaints were closed. No new wetlands complaints. Two ongoing wetlands complaints, both of which are in front of the commission right now. No wetland complaints or enforcement actions were closed. We have a total number of six applications in front of the Inland Wetlands Commission. Two are new, two were approved, and two were continued, and no new ZBA applications. I do have a couple of matters that I just want to bring to the commission's attention. One being, these are all current zoning matters. 6 Point Breeze Road. There was an ongoing zoning violation that started in June of 2025. The property owner placed some large rocks landward of the Thames River. Our office received notification from Connecticut Deep that we had to enforce the removal of that wall due to violations with Coastal Area Management Act. Myself and Meredith worked diligently with the property owner, and on October 31st, the property owner finally removed the rocks. ENS controls were installed, and the entire area was hydroseeding, bringing the area back to as close as possible its prior condition. Photos were sent to Deep, and they were extremely grateful for Motville's efforts in bringing this matter into compliance, so much so as they used this violation as a success story in their most recent biannual grant report to NOAA's Office for Coastal Management. So, you know, we actually benefited somewhere.
Get a gold star.
There you go.
Autographs will be available.
Autographs on checks, right?
The next one, 311 Fitchhill Road. This property was previously a mobile home park, and had the use had been abandoned by the previous property owner in writing. It was brought to our attention that someone was living in one of the mobile homes on the property.
Fitchhill Road.
We had conflicting situations with the town attorney. One town attorney told me to hold off and do nothing. Another town attorney told me to issue a cease and desist, which I did. However, to date, no response was received to that cease and desist. The property is currently set for a foreclosure sale as of January 17th, and the town attorney had instructed that I reach out to the mayor or to this commission for instruction as to how to move forward with this enforcement action.
Is the person living in there the owner of the trailer or the property?
Is that Jacoba Fitz's?
So I believe that it's being rented out.
It's being rented?
The trailer's being rented out. I only say that because there's a separate mailbox there for the individual trailer with a different name on it than the name on the property record for the property.
And you have a letter that this property was legally abandoned?
That's a first.
So the owner abandoned the use of a trailer park.
Correct.
Okay.
So who's collecting the rent?
Maybe it's water.
That's a good question.
that ordinance is. What you call this old trailer park official?
I see a business opportunity here.
No, I. It's scheduled for foreclosure January 17th, you said? Okay. The holidays are here.
Yeah. Oh.
A town attorney did mention that most likely the property owner will not be able to come up with the money to pay the back taxes, so the foreclosure sale will most likely go through. So probably us.
So you know what that tells me? They don't have the money to pay the attorney's fees or everything else. So how about if you report back to us at our January meeting? Let's see how that sale goes.
There you go.
And until then, you've issued him a cease and desist. You've done what you can.
I would sit on it for
anybody
now.
Anybody got any other comments?
I would sit on it for now because there's conflict in the information between the attorneys because the abandonment of property, that's a statutory thing, and there's case law on it, so it could get ugly.
You issued him the cease and desist.
Yeah.
Correct.
So they've been notified.
If that foreclosure sale does go forward on the 17th, whoever purchases that property purchases that violation.
Yep.
As well.
Yeah.
And it'll be up to them to clear.
They can start eviction, etc.
Yeah. The next one would be 50 Cook Drive, which is the water tower. Yeah. That tank is now in use. I still have not issued a certificate of zoning compliance. Because when the as-built was provided to WPCA's engineer, it was determined that there were some issues with the placement of items on site, not being in compliance with the approved plan or the variances which were applied for. I did receive word back from WPCA's engineer that a portion of the fence is being relocated, which was installed outside of the property line. So they're having the contractor fix that, and once that's done, they're going to have a revised as-built done to determine if the property is in compliance with the approved plan. If not, we would suggest that it possibly be rezoned to government to allow it to go into compliance, because moving the water tank, the tower, is not going to happen.
It has been a massive project.
Okay, so you have that
in the works,
in the motion.
Yes.
So you'll report back to us on that as well.
Yes. And the last one is 310 Route 163. That property has been an ongoing zoning violation since October of 2024. Been working with the property owner, who has hired attorneys and engineers. Nothing's panned out for him. He is looking to operate his business there, but he would require a change of use by this commission. So at this time, I have issued him a formal cease and desist with 30 days deadline for compliance. However, this commission will need to give me some direction as to how to proceed after those 30 days are up. The property owner did come in speak with us today, ironically, after I mailed the cease and desist, but it was in the postal truck, so I couldn't get it back. So he did come and indicated that he did hire an engineer, and he's going to be working towards bringing an application in front of the commission, but I just wanted to give you the heads up as to what's going on with that, because I did issue a cease and desist on it.
Okay.
I think that's all I have, unless anyone has any questions.
Sounds like you're on top of it.
Would you have issued the cease and desist after he came in?
Most likely, yes, because this has been an ongoing thing.
Okay.
He's hired attorneys. He's hired engineers. He just can't remember their names to give to me, so there's been a lot going on with it. So, yeah, I think I would have issued that cease and desist even if he had come in today.
Okay.
Just to secure us in a position that he doesn't do something, we're moving in the right direction.
So if he comes forward with real engineers and real information and real progress,
right,
we could possibly sit on the cease and desist. But if not, it's in place and
right.
Very good. Okay.
Okay.
Very good. That's it, Stace?
That's it.
Okay. Thank you very much. Land Use Director report.
All right, I'll be brief. Thursday night is, you'll get the, if you come, please come. 5:30 at the Community Center is the next workshop for the 332-163 study. There will be an update presentation, but it'll be an interactive discussion facilitated by the team. This is your time to dream about the future of Mockville, what it's going to look like, what you can do.
What day?
It's this Thursday at 5:30.
This Thursday. At
and that's Fair Oaks School.
Mm-hmm. Probably in the auditorium.
Fair Oaks Community Center.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Probably in their little auditorium.
where I used to vote.
Yeah.
No, they've got some good stuff going on with taking some surveys and visualizing and discussing what you want to see.
I think you'll find it very informative, very interesting.
We started touching upon it at their outreach meeting at the Senior Center last Thursday. Partly attended, only six individuals were attending, but there started to be some lively discussions options and bringing in arts and culture and theater and other elements into the fold. But this will be a two more outreach meetings later on after the New Year. I think one in February, one in March, and then the study concludes in April. The market analysis draft may be done from the inbox yesterday. I had not looked at it yesterday, but they'll give an update on all that. We did have a couple of cases of possible fraud, just so you are aware. If you haven't heard, two applicants for land use applications received emails asking if they would like to get their approval like today or somewhere. If you want your approval today, email me back and we'll initiate a wire transfer of the amount of $4,800 to an individual for a student after first protection. I found out today that other towns are getting the same exact thing happening. So it's not just us. But it's unfortunate.
There's an email coming from maybe or someplace like that? Is that email coming someplace like overseas?
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. And then we're going to need to start looking at some zoning regulation updates because of the acts that have happened. Mm-hmm. The Act 2533, but this other House bill, and I forget the number that was just mentioned, there are other housekeeping items that have been ongoing mm-hmm. that Meredith has been tracking. We've also been talking about trying to make it where we can friendly, more organized, more intuitive. There's some work that needs to be had. That along with the unique update to POCD, I was talking with the chairman
I'll report some of my thoughts to the issue.
Thank you for including us.
That's all I got.
Appreciate it. Thank you, Dennis. And again, that meeting, I'm just going to reiterate it, Thursday, if you can be there, it's a good opportunity to see from an outsider's view what they see as potential for the town. I think you'd find it some pretty exciting stuff.
I'll take this with me right
okay.
here.
Okay. Other business, we have none. Meredith?
Correspondence, we received two letters regarding 41 Beckwith Road. There's an existing 180-foot monopole tower there. They are currently have 9 antennas at the 167-foot level. They are looking to remove 12 radios and install 3 new antennas at the 167-foot level. They have indicated in their letter that the proposed modification will not result in an increase in the height of the existing tower. It will not require an extension of the site boundary. It will not increase noise levels at the facilities by 6 decibels or more. The operation of replacement of the antennas will not increase radio frequency emissions at the facility. The proposed modifications will not cause a change or alteration in the physical or environmental characteristics of the site. The existing structure and its foundation can support the proposed loading. One letter came from the applicant. One letter came from the Connecticut Siting Council to inform us. If the commission had any concerns, we could write a letter to them stating your concerns. However, I feel they addressed everything. There's not going to be any adverse effect.
Okay, very good.
The other letter that we got from the Connecticut Siting Council is a decision letter for one that was sent to us before for Eversource. Their intent to modify an existing energy facility located at the Fort Hill Farm substation and Montville substation. And a decision was made, and that's what this letter is informing you of. Okay. That's all I have for correspondence.
Okay. Entertain a motion to go into executive session.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Let the record show at that time. 4.
Who are you inviting?
Staff and commission.
Thank you.
Record show, we've returned from executive session. No votes were taken. The time is 8:40.
Anything else?
Thank you, staff. Big agenda, a lot of reports, a lot of paperwork. Appreciate the information. Great job. Thank you for the continued support. And
happy Thanksgiving.
Motion to adjourn.
Yep. I mean,
motion
to adjourn.
What's Thanksgiving? This week or
all right.
All right. What's Thanksgiving? Next week or this week?
Next week.
Oh.
Next week.